And here's the second. The church was experiencing terrible hardship. There had been several famines in the area, and a great deal of political instability was going on. Judea and all of the surrounding territories, which is where Jerusalem was located, were in economic crisis. And when you don't know if you will have enough to feed your family tomorrow, it's challenging to give away what you have today. It's challenging to trust God in these kinds of situations. And some of you will know this by experience. If you scratch below the surface of any book in the New Testament, it's not long before you hit the theme of caring for those in need. It's always there, like a river that runs just below the surface. So James speaks into this situation to encourage, to teach, and to train churches that were drowning under the strain of life. So let's read the first part of this letter together. And for a change, I'm not putting it on the slides, and we're just going to read it straight through, these first few verses. And it's the book of James. You'll find it in your pew Bible. I believe it's on page 977 if you want to look at that. Or if you want, you can just listen. It's right after Hebrews. Easy to miss. James, a servant of God and the Lord Jesus Christ, to the 12 tribes scattered among the nations, greetings. Consider it pure joy, my brothers and sisters, whenever you face trials of many kinds, because you know that the testing of your faith produces perseverance. Let perseverance finish its work so that you may be mature and complete, not lacking anything. If any of you lacks wisdom, you should ask God, who gives generously to all without finding fault, and it will be given to you. But when you ask, you must believe and not doubt, because the one who doubts is like a wave of the sea blown and tossed by the wind. That person should not expect to receive anything from the Lord. Such a person is double-minded and unstable in all they do. Believers in humble circumstances ought to take pride in their high position, but the rich should take pride in their humiliation, since they will pass away like a wild flower. But the sun rises with scorching heat and withers the plant. Its blossom falls and its beauty is destroyed. In the same way, the rich will fade away even while they go about their business. Blessed is the one who perseveres under trial, because having stood the test, that person will receive the crown of life that the Lord has promised to those who love him. When tempted, no one should say, God is tempting me. For God cannot be tempted by evil, nor does he tempt anyone. But each person is tempted when they are dragged away by their own evil desire and enticed. Then, after desire has conceived, it gives birth to sin. And sin, when it is full grown, gives birth to death. Don't be deceived. My dear brothers and sisters, every good and perfect gift is from above, coming down from the Father of the heavenly lights, who does not change like shifting shadows. He chose to give us birth through the word of truth, that we might be a kind of first fruits of all he created. So this passage is full of practical advice for the suffering church and answers to the hard questions that they were asking. The first thing that James does right off the bat is to address the issue of trials. What is the source of all their suffering? Why is God allowing these ongoing difficulties in their lives? And what is the right way to respond to them? So when James refers to trials, he means unwelcome and unexpected experiences. An example of a trial that Jesus talks about is the story of the Good Samaritan. An unsuspecting traveler gets attacked and robbed and badly beaten and left for dead. This is a trial and a particularly bad one at that. This man had an unexpected and unwanted experience, and it could have taken his life. Trials are the kinds of things that happen to everyone on this planet to various degrees as part of the ebb and flow of life. They happen to those who follow Jesus, and they happen to those who don't. In our setting, common examples of trials are sickness and disease, losing jobs, losing our home, investments that have gone bad, car accidents, business problems, betrayals from loved ones, divorce, family estrangements. I could go on and on. Trials have many different faces. So I want to start out by making one very important point here. If there's only one thing that you're going to remember about what I say today, I want this to be it. Are you listening? God does not bring trials into our lives. God does not make bad things happen to us. We don't get sick because God is punishing us for being bad. In the same way, we're not rewarded with good health or with money or success because we're good. Nobody loses their job because God takes it away. No one gets killed in a car accident because God sent an angel to cause it, even though Hollywood movies like to dramatize these kinds of things in movies. God does not play with our lives in this way to cause us suffering. That is not how God works. So when we then cry out to God, begging for an answer that will help us make sense of our miserable situation, we are not going to get anywhere. Why is this happening to me? People say. This is a question that God's not going to answer. There's no why that can help us make sense of pain and evil. The only answer is the one that we already know. Pain and suffering are the result of evil. Because there is evil in the world, bad stuff happens. And the more we work to resist evil, the less sense evil will make to us. People hear these words. God does not cause bad things to happen to us. So many people have a warped view of God because they believe God makes the bad things happen to them. And this is one belief that makes God feel like the enemy. Of course it would. How can you trust someone who is intentionally trying to hurt you? So if God isn't causing bad things to happen, where is God then in all of our pain? Well, I can tell you where God is. God is right there with you, experiencing the same pain that you are and offering deep healing comfort to your soul. If you give Jesus the right of way in your life, you will be comforted in your pain. The God of peace, who is the source of all love, will be with you. And that can change everything. So let's get back to the first statement that Jesus makes. Consider it pure joy, my brothers and sisters, whenever you face trials of many kinds. Sorry, James, what did you just say? I'm supposed to be thrilled when bad stuff happens? Like I'm supposed to enjoy it? No, of course that's not what James means here. Like Jesus on the cross, we all endure trials. Suffering is never fun. If it would, it would cease to be suffering. But if we allow God into our experience of suffering, God can use it to form us in positive ways. God takes something that is terrible, something that has the power to harm us, and finds a way to make some good out of it. And sometimes God makes a lot of good come out of it. This is one of God's great hallmarks, making good out of evil. When trials come, misery does not have to be the final word. And just so we're clear, James isn't trying to make light of people's suffering. Sometimes trials can create great trauma in people's lives and in families. Sometimes trials can be catastrophic. Sometimes they can destroy people. James knows this. At some point in his earlier life, he and his big brother endured the loss of their father. Then he watched as his brother endured a 3-year ministry that had him moving from one trial to another until it took him to his greatest trial, which cost him his life. James knew a whole lot about trials. He would never make light of suffering. So to understand what James is trying to accomplish here, we need to understand that this letter was written to people who were already suffering. James' goal here is to encourage those who are already living through crushing experiences. He wants them to know that good can come from all this pain. He's helping them learn how to grow through that suffering. He's helping them learn how to grow instead of wither. He's helping them understand that even though evil seems like it's out to destroy them, evil does not have to reign in their lives. God can and does use the agony of suffering to bring people into maturity and into completeness. So maturity was a big deal for James. He uses the word more than any New Testament author. To be mature means that God has actively formed your character. And maturity isn't this far away, impossible goal out there. A mature person is someone who is dedicated to becoming a person of integrity. It's someone who's loyal to God and devotes themselves to God's purposes. So I use the word integrity here, and I think it's worth defining it. You're a person of integrity when, for the most part, the person you are on the inside matches what you do on the outside. Your actions line up with your values. It's about the substance of who you are gradually changing to act and think more like God. So obviously no one has perfect integrity. But when you have a good amount of integrity, people start to notice it. They notice that you're different. You get known as a person who is trustworthy and honorable. And according to James, life's trials provide opportunities for us to learn how to endure struggle and to become people of integrity. Ultimately, it's those who endure struggle with Jesus as their guide who get to a place of maturity. So there's so much more about this passage that I want to push through, but I'm going to resist cramming too much into one morning. But as a final thought, I want to communicate to make one observation about what James encourages us to pray for when we are going through trials. When we are going through trials, James says, pray for wisdom. This may seem a little bit weird, but in the Jewish world, wisdom is another name for God, or in this case, the Spirit. Wisdom is so close to who God is and how God works and what God does in us, that wisdom became one of God's names. So in the midst of the worst of life's trials, we are to pray for wisdom. And God promises to send the Spirit named wisdom. The Spirit of wisdom will comfort us and guide us and teach us how to be transformed through our experience. And as we endure this hardship with God's wisdom as our guide, wisdom will weave its way into our being. And we will become wise through our trials. And if we're willing to allow the Spirit to do His holy work, we will be transformed in this way. When you or someone you care about is going through trials, prayer is a complex thing. Our instinct is to pray that God will remove the trial. How interesting it is that James here doesn't do that. He doesn't encourage those who are suffering to ask God to supernaturally intervene to end the circumstance that is causing all of the suffering. Instead, he encourages them to ask God to supernaturally intervene to provide heavenly wisdom, which will give them the capacity to endure through that trial. Verse 12 says, "Blessed is the one who perseveres under trial, because having stood the test, that person will receive the crown of life that the Lord has promised to those who love him." James is telling us that those who endure life's hardships with the Spirit as their comforter and their guide will enter into the kingdom of heaven and experience life that is truly life. Wisdom paves the road to joy in the kingdom. And as hard as it is to hear, in the world the way it is now at least, suffering and joy are often bound together. There's a kind of joy that can only be found when we first pass through suffering. Jesus knew all about this. He grew in wisdom and courage and strength as he endured trials, and he came out of the other side and experienced joy. So that when it came time for his greatest trial, which we just commemorated last week, Jesus knew that joy was waiting for him when it was over. It was hope in the coming joy that gave him the capacity to persevere through that trial on the cross. And because Jesus endured that trial, he was able to cut a path of life through the greatest evil, death. He didn't go through over it, and he didn't go around it, and he didn't go under it. Jesus went through it. He went through that trial so that we could get the chance to experience God's joy right along with him. This is Jesus' great reward. His great joy for the trials of life and the trial of death on a cross was that we get to live in unity with him now and forever. So the farther along I go in my faith journey, the less I expect God will miraculously intervene to change circumstances in order to relieve suffering. It seems that in most cases, God is a lot more interested in forming us through pain and suffering than he is in removing us from it. I see this reality lived out in my own life, and I see it lived out in yours as well. So often, when we cry out to God to remove our trials from us, God says no. Not because God likes to see us suffer, definitely not. Of course that's not true. Jesus lived out the full experience of being human. He suffered. He knows how hard it is. But he also knows that suffering ends. Because of Jesus, suffering doesn't have the final word. If we allow God to enter into our experience of suffering with us and follow Jesus along the path of life that he has cut for us, at some point along the way, our trials and the pain that they cause in us will give way to joy. So I've talked about trials in a really abstract way. And sometimes it's easier to get our heads around ideas when we have concrete examples to pull from. So I'd like to tell you a little bit of my own story. So I have some experience with trials, but the one that has made the greatest mark on my life is my battle with depression and anxiety. So depression and anxiety have been my close companions since my teenage years, over 35 years. And it took more than a decade to figure out what was going on and to get it properly treated. Once that happened, I started to find a state that was closer to normal, and I realized how much pain I'd been in. Life had been quite agonizing. I just hadn't really known or understood that. So once you've experienced depression or anxiety, they have a tendency to return, and that was certainly the case for me. For some reason, medications stop working, or a particularly stressful situation brings them back to the surface. So reoccurrences have been part of the ebb and flow of my regular life. So most people understand depression to some degree. For me, depression was a crushing, aching sadness. At times, I can feel paralyzed with pain. It often manifests itself in physical pain in my chest, and it feels like someone I love very much has just died, but no one has. Now, anxiety is different. Most people don't understand anxiety very well at all. Anxiety is when your body gets stuck in fight or flight mode. Your body believes there's a threat, but there is none. And because there's no threat, the state of high alert in your body doesn't resolve. Brains get stuck in high gear. Focusing on one task and relaxing into it gets very difficult. Sometimes thoughts get stuck in repetitive loops, painful repetitive loops, which are reoccurring, which is where the worrying piece can come in and why people so often associate anxiety with worrying. thoughts just fester and swirl around in your head. And when you're in an anxious state, it can become very hard to sleep, sometimes impossible. It can be very hard to relax and hard to find peace in life. Nerves get frayed. And all in all, it's just a very uncomfortable state to be in. And when it's bad, life is very hard. So I've known lots of different kinds of pain in my life. And of all those different kinds of pains that I've experienced, mental illness has been the worst. Mental illness attacks you in the core of who you are. It breaks down your will to live and your love of life. It's a kind of pain like nothing else. So I've prayed many times over the years for God to supernaturally release me from it, but healing has never come, not in that way at least. Many have prayed this for me as well. So I've had great success with medication and therapy over the years, but I haven't been healed. Truthfully, I have no sense that healing will ever come in this life for me from this issue. So this sounds pretty awful, doesn't it? Well, it is and it isn't. Because God has formed me through this suffering. I wouldn't be who I am today if it hadn't been for it. And I'm absolutely sure that I would not be here as your pastor, loving you as I do, if I had not been through that. I am quite sure I would be a far more arrogant person. I would have judged those with mental illness. Maybe some of you are judging me right now, some of you who don't understand it. It has become a weakness that I do my best to embrace because it has made me a better me. I've become more like Jesus than I ever would have been without it. So don't get me wrong. I would never have chosen this for myself. I would never choose this for anybody. But there's a weird kind of paradox in the Christian life. I would never wish this on myself, and I certainly would get rid of it in the future if I could do so. But I'm glad that I have gone through this in the past. Because of the work that the Spirit has done in and through me in depression and anxiety, have given me more than they have taken away. And that's quite a strong statement because they've taken away a lot. And because of them, because of all the stuff that I've experienced through them in the past, I have experienced a great deal of joy. I have reached out to Jesus in a way that I never would have otherwise, and I have experienced Jesus in a way that I never would have otherwise. And then there's the additional joy that comes when I'm able to engage with you and your stories in a way that I never would have before. In the way that I'm able to experience and empathize with your suffering when you share your suffering with me in a way that I never would have otherwise. So my greatest experience with anxiety happened 6 years ago when I was undergoing chemo for breast cancer. And because of that, because I was in chemo, what often happens is what does happen is you're chemically and hormonally affected in a lot of ways. It's quite a violent experience. And my anxiety became quite high. But ironically, it was one of the best times of my life. I wasn't worried at all. I had no thoughts of worry. I was completely at peace. I never feared death. I didn't fear the treatment. I had great peace about everything related to the cancer experience, which was incredible in and of itself. But one of the things that chemo does give you is it gives you lots of time. And I asked God to use that time. And God showed up in a completely miraculous way, not to heal my body. He was letting medicine take care of all of that, but to heal my soul in ways that I didn't even know that it needed healing. The Spirit used that time mostly to teach me about kindness. It's a lesson that I had not learned well in life. Mostly, I had to learn how to be kind to myself. I learned how to give myself a break. I learned how to ease up on myself. I learned how to make peace with my weaknesses. And I became far more kind and gentle to others. And I've looked back on that experience, and I've often said that if you gave me $1 million, I would not trade away that cancer experience. It gave me so much. So I have one final thought. Trials are hard. They are very hard. But when we go through them alone, trials can be agony. Trials are one of the best ways for us to become isolated. Because in this culture, we are taught to feel shame when trials come. Trials are great opportunities for people to judge others and to shame them. Shame's how society controls people. It's how people on the top keep people who are below them down. So of course we don't want to talk about our trials publicly. It makes us really vulnerable to shame. So we fear shame. And because of that, we keep our trials a secret. We become isolated when we need community the most. So let me say this clearly and very decisively here. Shame is evil, and it has no place in the kingdom of God. It has no place in Jesus' church. The burdens of our trials are meant to be carried together. So if you want to talk about any trials that you are going through, there are a lot of people that are safe to talk to here. You can talk to the pastors. You can talk to the elders. You can talk to life group leaders. These people are good at listening without judging. There are many people in this building who will be able to empathize you. Already I know that there are many of you who are going through similar struggles that I've talked to you about. And we all know, everyone who knows families with young children, know that these both issues of depression and anxiety are epidemic among youth. We don't know why. No one knows completely why this is going on. But it is destroying our children. These are issues that must be talked about. And the church needs to be a safe place for this to happen. We need to be able to talk about these things. There's a saying, a burden shared is a burden halved. I think this is a big part of what the church is meant to do. This is a place where we are meant to be able to share our burdens together. Because, you know, we are all stories. And all good stories have trials. Own your story. Don't be ashamed of it. And allow your church to share your trials with you. Let us become part of your story. We will all be the better for it. Let's pray together. Lord, thank you for all the teaching you have for us on trials. Thank you for the hope you give us about trials, a hope that when we are walking through the darkness of these trials, we can see the hope of joy at the end. Help us hold on to that promise and believe in that promise that you are going to get us there. Thank you for all you've done and the way ways you love us. Thank you that you carry us through the journey, carry us through our trials and through our pain. Lord, help us be brave and open up to each other through these trials and through our struggles. Help us open up to each other. And when people open up to us, help us have ears to listen. Help us be Jesus to them. Amen.